live on Discovery Paranormal. This is Michael Angley, and this is Tuesday, and this is January 17th, 2017. On tonight's show, we're going to cover a lot of cool areas of discussion when it comes to science and when it comes to ghosts. We'll just say ghosts, spirit energy, whatever you want to call it. And for the last several shows, I've talked about, you know, like last show I talked about matter, dark matter, antimatter, all that, and quantum physics, quantum computing. And I'm kind of doing this as a series because I feel like all you guys are listening every week. And then, you know, it's nice to have a series of talks that we can reflect back on, you know, and I think that it's important to have that when you put together evidence, when you're trying to figure out what we as humans have a very limited understanding of. And it depends on who you talk to, you know. I've met ghost hunters, and I know paranormal investigators, they don't like the word ghost hunters. It dumbs it down. To me, it's like saying ghost chili. Am I going to say Naza Hawoka? No. People look at me like, you know, they'll say, God bless you, think I sneezed or something, you know what I mean? Naza Hawoka, God bless you. You know, no. You say ghost chili, because that's what people know. So I like to dumb things down sometimes or just make things accessible for regular old people out there. Not everybody's a Rhodes Scholar, and not everybody's an idiot. There's middle ground there somewhere. So it's nice to have a communicative type of situation where everybody can get together and say, hey, I get that, or wow, you know, I had that experience, or I know people that have had that experience. And then I know a lot of ghost hunters who go out there, and they do good work. They move spirits on. They have mediums for the most part. They say prayers. And all of that, no matter what you think about it, it's good energy. If people are going to go out there and do good for other people who are going through something, turmoil, and you know I do it. I mean, we have the American Ghost Hunters, you know. And then, you know, Peter Kanellis and I basically go out with the people that we invite in, depending on the investigation. And, you know, we look for evidence, yeah, but it's more about accomplishing goals. And even if we didn't have a camera going, we'd still be doing the same thing. So it's about helping people. I think that when you have a calling, you need to answer that calling, no matter what it is. You know, maybe you have a calling for some kind of religion that maybe you can communicate that text, you know, from that book to somebody better than the next person. Or maybe the book is meant for everybody to understand things individually. It's kind of like a song, you know? It's very hard to describe. Let's say one of my favorite bands is AC/DC, of course, especially back in the day with Bon Scott. I kind of feel that the band should have even changed their name when they put Brian Johnson in there. But, you know, not to take anything away from Brian, he's a great man, great singer, great talent. You know, has done great things and has helped people out there and is a wild man, as a rock and roll person should be, right? So, but those songs, I've been listening to AC/DC since I was 12, so not 50. Those songs have evolved with my life. And a song that maybe meant one thing to me when I was, you know, 12 or 13 or 15 or 18 or 20, means something different when I was 30 and 35 and 40 and 45 and now. You know, when I listen to these songs, so my experiences shape what that song means, right? So much like any kind of Bible or religious text that you read, you know, is it for our subject, for somebody else's interpretation? And often, that's all it really is. And the Bible, in of itself, is somebody else's interpretation of said events and things that had went on. You know, and then that information over a long time, you know, we're talking about 2,000 years of history from this particular thing, but then after the Bible was put together, it took a very long time, and that information, you know, survived hundreds of years to be put together. But then you look at the King James Version, which only has so many books in it. Then you look at the Ethiopian Version or the Greek Version, Ethiopian has the most amount of books. And then the Greek version, I think maybe 50 or something like that. So it all depends on what you believe and what your perception is. But I'm here to tell you that you can look around the world today, and there's nothing different going on today that went on back then. There's just more of it. And there's more of it and more access to it. You know, are people crucified today? Of course they are. They're crucified on poles. ISIS crucifies people. But people are crucified in the media, for instance. People are crucified in their community. You know, if somebody out there wants to do damage against you, especially if it's for no reason, you know, it's for no reason or whatever, and they just take target at you for whatever, they can direct that energy towards you, and you're going to suffer. So much like voodoo, you know, much like things like that that you focus that type of energy on, and it depends on the energy, right? So the show tonight's about energy, which it always is, but in this essence, and I don't want to get off track, because I feel like I'm getting off track already, but in this essence, we're going to talk about the Bermuda Triangle, and then there's actually 12 of them around the world, you know, and a scientist who back in the day could, you know, there are parapsychologists. Parapsychologists are basically professionals who go out there and do investigations into these in the world, take readings and try to put together information. And I've met ghost hunters. By the way, you can see my ghost hunting investigations with Peter and the people that we bring with us at Discovery Paranormal on YouTube. So youtube.com/Discovery Paranormal, all one word. And you'll see the American Ghost Hunters and what we do. But I've met people, and I've been doing this for a long time. Peter's been doing it longer than me. We don't know everything. We never say we know everything. You know, we actually say, you know, we're learning. And that's what it is, because it's not like you can put together, you know, on a table in front of you said items and examine them. It's an elusive world, you know, and you have to go by the experience. I've met ghost hunters that told me that they were experts. I've met demonologists who were 19 years old. So maybe they got that call. Like if you're called to that religion, maybe you're called to ghost hunting. We tell people not to do it. Because there are people, yeah, that don't have a calling, but they want a thrill seek, and they think that's going to be some kind of exciting thing. You know, you're talking about a world of unbelievable emotion, pure energy, good vortex, bad vortex, portals of energy that can just suck you in and affect you. You know, when we do, like, the heavy investigations, like when people are being scratched from head to toe, even with their clothing on, or pushed down the stairs, we've gotten that. That was all the same house, actually. Doors opening and closing, slamming shut when they had locks on both sides. Yeah, that type of stuff. When you do an investigation like that, and I can't tell you about other people who perform paranormal investigations, it's kind of like part of you goes into that world. Like when Peter and I do it, I feel like we build a bridge. And that's the best way I can explain it. And you probably heard me say that a lot. Because that bridge is what we use to communicate. And they come over. Sometimes it's easier. Sometimes it's not as easy. But I'll tell you, after an investigation, you have a ton of energy, man. You're flying, you know? Especially if it's a good investigation. If it's a heavy investigation and you move somebody on, you're still feeling pretty good because you're moving energy around, a lot of energy around. And like in martial arts, you're going to hear about energy. You know, the people who really get into martial arts, who practice true martial arts, will always talk about energy and pushing and pulling and moving it around, like making coffee, you know? Pulling it and pushing it around, doing that, constantly moving. That's the deal. You know, it's energy. So it takes days, times. Like, they don't be tired in the day. Like not tired on the outside, like tired on the inside, where you just want to kind of just chill, do nothing, and kind of, you know, usually when we do an investigation, you know, go home and go right through the evidence, start tearing into it. That's usually 4 or 5, 6 o'clock in the morning. It's something that you can't wait. At least the pictures, and take a look to see if you got something. And we take a lot of pictures. We have a lot of cameras. You know, we do a lot of video, a lot of audio, and a lot of it's real time. You know, some of our motion cams, some of our cameras are motion cams, if it picks up some kind of motion. But sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. If there's enough physical presence there, enough vibration in the air to make that motion sensor go off, depending what kind of motion sensors you use. So then when I first got into this, I had very basic equipment, same as Pete, and then we moved up to really sensitive stuff. You know, hunting cameras that have way less than a 1 second trigger time, and that'll take a series of pictures or video or time elapsed video, high quality, high megapixel, very sensitive. If it's got, and I test stuff out. I buy something, man, I love to test it out, love playing around with it, run around in the dark, you know, especially for things that are infrared, to see what kind of distance I can get out of it, see where I need to be to set this thing off, and that's just me. So imagine a vibration in the air. A lot of people ask me how these ghosts can have a full body, or how they can touch or scratch or push someone, and it's all about the vibration and the place that they're in. So we did one place, had a huge portal of energy. We had a medium with us. She picked up on it right away. We were like 2 blocks away, and she picked up on it. Is it a natural current? Is it something that was brought upon by somebody else? You know, is it something that happens because of power lines? Perhaps because of electromagnetic energy? Because the energy that we produce is much the energy that they can use. So, especially if you start talking about subatomic levels and things like that, it's a vibration. The best way to describe it, it's a vibration. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about, first and foremost, you know, we've been talking a lot about UFOs and, you know, aliens, that type of thing, and then especially with the dark energy. I knew this great martial art master, Master Sherm. He would be every day at Purple Bamboo Park in Beijing, and he would practice martial arts and teach people stuff and that type of thing. He wouldn't charge them. Just, you know, you could pick his brain. Great guy. First time I saw him, he was messing with a bunch of other people. There was all these people standing in a row and all pushing against one another, all in a row. And then he had one of his hands just standing there, basically his other hand at his side. One hand, his right hand, was pressed against the person in front of him, and they made a chain of people. And they were well over 20, maybe even 27 people, somewhere around that. So he makes a sound like, shoot, taps the person's hand in front of him, and sends a chain reaction of energy all through all of them, where they all went sprawling all over the ground. And then, you know, you happen upon something like this, your scientific mind, especially if you know about Hollywood, you know about movies, you know about entertainment, you know about people hoaxing, you know about all kinds of stuff. I'm a big doubter. I know sometimes it doesn't sound like it, but when I talk from experience, I'm telling you the things that I've experienced and what I believe them to be. And what I've tried to go through my personal extinction pattern of disproving things in my brain, or disproving things evidence-wise. You know, when we get readings, and a certain readings, we try to disprove it and see what is making that reading. If we start having intelligent contact through some kind of electronic device, we make sure that there's nothing that can interfere with that we're having pure and real results. And this is about scientific findings, right? So, in essence, what was Master Sherm doing? Let's say it's real. And yes, I believe it's real. I also believe that those people, I talked to some of the people, and they said they felt like they were in a wave, like in waves, like if you're going to go jump in the ocean and you're playing around in waves. They felt like they were in waves of energy, and it moved through them. Master Sherm doesn't share secrets. But he's somebody who studied at Shaolin. And somebody studied on Emi Mountain. Somebody who studied at Wuyi Mountain. You know? So this is somebody who dedicated his entire life to energy, and martial arts is energy. It's not about punching somebody in the face. It can be about that if you have to defend yourself. If you have the right energy, nobody would even want to attack you, actually, or they think twice about it. It depends what kind of presence you have. But I don't want to get into that. Let's talk about just this. How do you think that Master Sherm sent the shockwave into a couple of dozen people or more and sent them sprawling? So this became like a thing in Purple Bamboo Park where this guy would do this on the reg and, you know, put on a display with different people almost all the time. He is a legend there. Purple Bamboo Park, where a lot of people practice Tai Chi and Qigong, right? So they're vibrating in front of trees. You know, you ever vibrate, you vibrate in front of a tree. It's a belief that you can pull energy from the earth, from that tree. And there's also something that's called the dragon's vein, which is energy that pours over the earth. And somebody who knows how can tap that energy, right? So how did Master Sherm, in a physical sense, in a scientific sense, send those people sprawling in a wave of energy? So last week we talked about matter, antimatter, dark energy, and dark matter, right? And maybe you can even think about how dark energy, you know, scientists believe that dark energy and dark matter are about 95% of the universe. I don't know if it's tilted like that, but they're going by the matter that they see, the universe's solar systems that are already assembled and held together. And these solar systems aren't held together by the star that they surround. These solar systems are together by the dark energy and our dark matter that surrounds it. So let's say this energy is streaming through things. Right now, those particles are going right through us, because these are subatomic particles that travel faster than the speed of light. Listen to last week's show. We talked about that existence within that speed of light as one realm and one dimension. So can Master Sherm somehow, oddly enough, weirdly enough, harness that type of energy and take it and throw it to those people and take all of that and send them sprawling? Or is it bullcrap? Is it theatrics? Or do people want to believe it? And because they want to believe it, they do it for themselves. Or they think they feel something and that sends them sprawling. Is it mental? Or is it spiritual? Is it this guy's got so much of a light and so much energy that he can take it and toss it and it actually disorients people and pushes them around? Because I've heard of stuff like that. I've never seen it. I've never experienced it, but I have heard about it. And I've also heard people talk about it that I believe it. You know, a lot of people send me pictures, the same as Pete. They send us pictures of ghosts, and then there's ghost apps all over the place on the internet. You know, it looks fake. You know, you don't even have to bat an eyelash. It looks fake. Or somebody sends me video of, like, a gust floating around, or they captured a raindrop coming down and it looks like some orb of light, or it's a bug flying around. And they believe it, man. They believe what they've captured is a ghost. I've seen dust on national paranormal programs who shall remain nameless. I've seen dust, and these guys say, wow, look, we're surrounded by spirits. Oh, look at them. They're all so beautiful. Oh, this guy, this woman sitting there. I'm like, really? It's dust. You got a dusty house. I mean, clean that thing. You got to get some Merry Maid service in there. Not that I endorse Merry Maid. Get somebody in there clean. It's disgusting. You know? Or somebody shows me a picture of a moth flying around. Like, look at the ghost. And the moth. You know, or they're smoking a cigarette. It's one of my favorite ones. They're smoking a cigarette as they're taking a picture with some crappy camera And then they like, oh my God, look. That was a fun one. I'm like, were you smoking a cigarette? I'm like, yeah. Well, do you think that's your ectoplasma? Your stogie? Come on, man. Steve and I go into a situation, we don't even wear cologne. Just clean. You want to be clean because you want to be able to smell what's around you. Because sometimes these spirits communicate with a certain smell. Are you smelling it? Or are they recreating it in a vibration, and then they're making you smell it somehow, and they're sending that sense, because we only have a limited amount of senses externally. Internally, we have loads. Externally, we only have 5. But in one, all right, so like in one place, the guy's grandmother came through, and she was all with fresh flowers, roses all the time. The whole room, as soon as we started talking to her, I asked her if heaven was beautiful, and she grabbed my hand, my right hand. I was standing next to the camera. The room was dark, of course. There's a couple people in there. Pete's in there. This guy David and his mom, and he had 2 little dogs. I'm in the back by the door, and then she grabs my hand. I know it's her, because I knew it was her. Like, in my mind, I saw her in my mind's eye. And the whole room, at that point, filled full of fresh roses. And then so what I said to Pete, and this is how fine-tuned we are in investigation, and the people that you investigate with, after a while, you get fine-tuned to each other, the sounds that you make and the things that you do, you know, and even the questions that you ask. So I said to Pete, who was closest to me, do you smell that? And he said, I smell fresh roses. I'm like, right. And the whole room, everybody smelled it, you know, started smelling this guy, Dave and his mom. So then, is there anything in the room or the next room, you know, that could make that odor, you know? Is there anything, an air freshener that could just pop up and create that? He said, no, nothing. This is the same apartment where we had a burning odor, because David kept seeing this burnt kid in his bedroom. And this is a guy who was like a medium, but he didn't want to be a medium. I'm on the show here, you know, and then we he's in our videos. We've done a few videos with David. And I think that was our second investigation ever, Pete and I, together as a team, was his apartment, a newly built apartment. And these people that were there, his relatives. And the best picture we ever got was there of his aunt, who's holding a rosewood box. We have a beautiful picture of her. And then another picture of her right in front of Pete, staring right in his face too, creepily enough, standing where a desk was. So yeah, I believe. And I think that these entities utilize that energy to give you a message or to come around and just maybe even a way of comforting you. And I know so many people that lost loved ones, including me, you know, including me, just recently. And you want those people to come around and visit you and say hello, you know, to make you feel better, that you know that they're better. Yeah, they're dead. I get it. Yeah, they're gone. And from this realm, sort of. Are they gone? Or do they exist on a certain level? And that's the question. That's the question. So let's talk about first energy. So Ivan Sanderson was a professional biologist who founded the Society for the Investigation of Unexplained in Columbia, New Jersey. And New Jersey is a great place for unexplained stuff, including the Jersey Devil, which is a whole show unto itself. I actually know people that think they encountered it and they don't have a good experience to tell us. I should get them on the show. So this guy wrote The 12 Devils Graveyards Around the World for Saga Magazine back in 1972. At some point, it was reprinted in Paradox Magazine, so you can find this out there. So with several of his associates, he set out to pattern the mysteries of these missing ships, you know, airplanes, ships, vessels of all kinds that go missing, like in the Bermuda Triangle. Since I was a kid, a wee little child. I've been hearing about the Bermuda Triangle. It was a big deal. It was something people liked to talk about. It was a mysterious thing where several airplanes have gone missing. And not just that. In that region, there are also stories of people who go into, like, these time holes. There was a guy in an airplane, just, I think, a double-engine Cessna, who got up there. And for his flight that was supposed to last 4 hours, it lasted 10 minutes. And this is documented from the one tower to the other, when the guy took off, when the guy landed. And the guys in the tower were like, you can't possibly be here. You only took off 10 minutes ago. This dude said he went into some kind of energy vortex, was swirling around, and then he flew right through a hole, like some kind of tunnel, and he got there. That's scientifically documented. But there's other stories from around the world of airplanes showing up that disappeared, and they show up with, sometimes with skeletons, sometimes with nothing. One airplane showed up with no people, and the coffee was still hot that the people were drinking on. The newspapers were still fresh with newspaper print. And these planes just come out of a cloud of nothingness, and they land, and there's no pilot aboard. There's nobody aboard. This is real. This is the real deal. So, yeah, there's people out there that are going to doubt all kinds of stuff. Let me tell you, man, as an investigator, if I was to reject evidence, then I'm living in ignorance. And I'm doing it specifically for a reason that I don't want to know, all right? So this guy, Ivan Sanderson, and his people took full advantage of modern communication technology at that point back in the 70s. Think about that. And statistical data analysis, his success was startling, reportedly. The 12 devil's graveyards around the world plotted ship and plane disappearances, focusing attention on 12 areas based over the globe in which magnetic anomalies and other energy aberrations were linked to a full spectrum of strange physical phenomena. Highest on Sanderson's statistical priority was this lozenge-shaped area east of Miami in the Bahamas. On the western tip of the infamous Bermuda Triangle, this area's high profile of strange events, Sanderson concluded, was the most due to the enormous flow of air, sea traffic, other zones of anomaly, though less familiar because they don't have the same kind of traffic. Another area of continuing disappearances and mysterious time warps is the Devil's Sea, located east of Japan between Iwo Jima and Marcus Island. Here, events have become so sinister that the Japanese government has officially designated the area a danger zone. Sanderson theorized that the tremendous hot and cold currents across his most active zones might create the electromagnetic gymnastics affecting instruments and vehicles and energy, right? Because here we have these vortexes around the world. No matter what is causing that energy, there are things that utilize that energy. When I was a kid, they said it was UFOs that were taking these ships, you know, and it's been theorized, even in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, awesome movie. In that movie, at the end, when the aliens showed up, all the people that were taken back in the day from, like, World War II era and all that and all along, pilots, people on ships, that type of thing, were coming out of ship. These aliens just decided to mess with them. Take them on a ride, and then there they are. And it could have been as easy as, you know, if you're talking about dimensional energy, one day could be, you know, 6 years, 10 years, 40 years, 50 years. It depends on what you're thinking about and what direction you're taking. So let's think about anything is possible. In a universe where anything is possible, literally, anything is possible. So you can't discount it unless you can disprove it. If you can disprove it, you can discount it, right? So, I want to read this story to you because this is pretty interesting and it talks a lot about what I'm talking about. It actually explains it a bit more. So, have you ever noticed when you've walked into an area of unusual temperature change where it's more vivid color than the surrounding area? There's a blurring, perhaps, or a sense of enhanced energy. Now, any ghost hunter out there is going to say yes, who's done it enough, who's experienced these things, right? Because I believe that when a spirit's trying to manifest itself, it uses the thermal air around it as electric to do so, to give it energy, right? So if you stumble across these vortexes, or if you stumble across this type of energy, we're going to call it a vortex, which basically houses a spirit or interdimensional portal, right? Some psychics believe that, on average, most homes contain at least one of these portals. And I haven't found that. Even though we've gone to places that have all, every place that we've gone to has been active, but because we've been called into these places, and it wasn't like, ooh, my house is settling, it's making some creaky, jerky, leaky, crazy sounds. No. People are telling me to get out, my walls are bleeding, you know what I mean? And they call us in. All right, so in technical terms, the spirit portal is a region of space that has a four-dimensional vibratory frequency, where this region of three-dimensional physical plane and the fourth-dimensional etheric plane merge into each other through the aid of an energy vortex. In simple terms, the spirit portal is a doorway in the physical world that allows free access to and from the spirit world. Like how I say, Pete and I build a bridge. You can look at it like that. Okay. The existence of a portal can rely on a vortex of energy to sustain it. This is an area of mass energy in a high concentration, usually originating from magnetic, spiritual, or sometimes unknown sources that create powerful eddies that manifest a spiral of energy, which can be positive or negative in nature. Vortexes tend to exist where there are strong concentrations of gravitational anomalies. This, in turn, creates an area that can bend light and cause a considerable distortion in the human energy field. Now, apply that to the Bermuda Triangle. Apply that to these devil's gates. All right? Think about that. All right. They have also been known to be associated with ley lines and have been found to be considerably stronger at node points where several ley lines cross. So that's interestingly enough, because Peter and I have been investigating a lot of places, and there's two ley lines that run right across from Buffalo, New York, all the way through like Albany, and then another ley line cuts straight down. So you have those ley lines crossing, and this is kind of the areas that we've been doing. Before I even got into ley lines, we were doing this, and we were just following the trail and going by word of mouth, and one person would say, hey, check this place out. Basically, we were following the Erie Canal, which is interesting, all right? And also, moving water contains that type of energy that can give you or give the spirit world energy, right? So vortex tend to exist where there are strong concentrations of gravitational anomalies. This, in turn, creates an area that can bend light and cause considerable distortion. Vortexes and portals can be categorized along according to directions of natural energy flow. Two examples are upflow vortexes, positive portals. This is where the energy is flowing upward out of the earth. These vortexes are generally revitalizing and feel positive. Like when you get blasted with negative ions, you know, and like if you're hanging out by a waterfall or any kind of water source like that. Like with me, you know, there are 12 waterfalls within 20 minutes away from me, and some of them are a couple hundred feet tall. So I like hanging out at these waterfalls because they make me feel good. When I leave, I feel like my batteries are recharged, especially after an investigation. So winter, spring, summer, fall, you go to these waterfalls, you're going to feel that energy, right? So the energy here feels more electric than magnetic, and is said to boost spiritual skills to stretch and expand the consciousness. Inflow vortexes, negative portals, this is where the energy is flowing inward. towards the Earth. The energy here feels heavier and more negative if unprepared for its downward impact. Fear is often experienced at these sites if you are not ready. If you're not ready of the ensuing introspection, these vortexes are linked with female or yin energy, you could say, and are best for healing and self-realization. Now, you can't confuse that with when I say we do an investigation and it's a negative investigation, it's very heavy. You know, you're not going to be able to use that heavy energy for any kind of self-realization. You know what I mean? And people are terrorized at times, and I mean terrorized, by these things. Then you have to protect yourself. You got to surround yourself in white light, and you have to vibrate to a level of self-protection and to try to get that negativity out of it. So if you encounter a negative portal, you will feel like you're in the middle of a hurricane of negative energy and emotions. Sometimes you will feel anger, hate, fear, jealousy, and depression. So if you can say that, those negative entities love this type of stuff because they get energy off of stuff. And usually we start laughing and joking around. That changes the energy of the whole place. We've been criticized by people who watch the videos. You guys talk too much and you laugh too much. Number one, we're doing what we're enjoying, right? But number two, it's much better to get spirits to enter your conversation if you're having a conversation than just yelling at them, asking them things or trying to provoke them and doing that. And I like to laugh and joke around, so is Pete. And when we do, the whole atmosphere changes and the good stuff comes out. You know what negative energy, what they love? I know people that lived in a house and they're always arguing, yelling, and screaming at each other, a whole family of people, right? Negative energy loves that. Those negative entities, they suck that up. They love it. They even egg it on. So there's a lot to be considered when you start talking about vortex and all this. All right? Highly sensitive people will become victims of nightmares and feelings of oppression as negative entities make use of these portals, you know? So I think that I know empaths who have been, you know, they told me raped when they were young by entities and that type of thing. If you're open to it, or if you're that, maybe we'll say special enough to have that level of being, that makes you more susceptible to that type of thing, you know? And I haven't just heard that once. I've heard male and female say they've been raped by entities. And I know a woman that says that she's in a relationship with an entity. And yeah, you want to look at them like they're crazy or something and try to say, how could that be? Or how could these entities get so much physical presence that they could do anything? You know? But they do. And they can. And some of them are quite manipulative. And that's why when we tell people not to get into the ghost hunting, unless you're like really called to it or something, yeah, you have to understand that. Yeah, you may encounter a child energy that's not a child energy. It could be anything. Calling out to you, trying to get you to take it home, trying to be with you, or trying to, seduce you in some way, or it's going to use you. This is why we tell people not to use, Ouija boards and things like that, or anything, for that matter. If you're going to start communicating with that world, you need to educate yourself and go beyond so-called experts, because it's all about, you know, trial and error, really. You just try what works and try to get a conversation. Try to understand why they're there. You know what? Every spirit's got a different story. So look at it like that. So mirrors and water are also popular ways of creating a portal to the other side. I know people, including myself, that have done this, that have stared at mirrors, and you actually see your face change, and it's not a hallucination, and it's not your mind trying to change, you know, your facial structure. You start seeing different people come out. I know people that, including me, have stared at a mirror at night and you can see your aura. You can see you glow in a pitch black room where there's no light coming in. I've done this in a dark room with no light, nothing. So mirrors, water. Why is that? Why do mirrors hold entities? Because we've gotten a lot of pictures of spirits in mirrors as reflections, right? So somehow, something about it dimensionally allows them to do it or holds them. And these are things that are also used time and time again by a lot of people. You know, think about like a residual haunting, which is basically something that happens over and over again every day. You know, if it's in a mansion, it might be a butler carrying the morning paper on a platter with orange juice and breakfast to his, you know, his master, whatever you want to call it. You know, is the poor slave guy showing up with his stuff to serve somebody. You'll see that over and over and over again because it's like an imprint in time, especially in places that have those ley lines running through or have some kind of vortex that's involved, right? And I've seen this. You can't communicate with them either. It's a non-intelligent haunting. So many people inadvertently open portals, and they don't even know what the hell they've done until it's too late. You know, just like that one house that we did that was over in Hammondsport where people were being pushed down the stairs, scratched from head to toe. This little kid who was autistic would wake up, open his eyes, and see all these eyeballs looking at him. People, like a bunch of people gathered together. And no family ever lived there longer than 6 months to a year, not longer than a year. 6 months, 8 months, 9 months, I think 9 months was the longest that anybody ever lived in that house. So when I looked up the history, I found that people have died there. They all suffocated, which is what I felt about the place, you know, way back in like 1907. And the house was built in 1900. So basically it was a get out of my house thing. And imagine if you opened your eyes and there were people living in your house. And you and your family is there. Things aren't quite real. Things aren't quite right. The world has changed for you, for sure. And you're confused. And then we get a lot of confusion a lot of times. People are confused. Imagine all of that. The first thing you could be able to get out of my house. Who the hell are you? What are you doing in my house? So when you have paranormal investigators show up, they're there to talk to these entities. They're there to talk to spirits. So we're going to come in, and we're going to build that bridge, and we're going to say, hey, talk to us. You know, we're here for you. What happened? Tell us your story. So much of the time, I have names to call out to. I get names. Sometimes I get names from mediums. Sometimes I get names from doing investigation on the property, the history. And then there are things I like to call out to within that time frame that they existed, that they would identify with. So, you know, maybe I'll identify the centennial, the first 100 years of the country in 1876, which was a big deal. When you start talking about major events, they realize that you're talking on their level, and you can communicate with them, all right? So if there's both positive and negative portals, you have to ask a question, why would any spirit guides or other ascended beings allow negative portals at all? So there are people that say it's all about free will, that we all possess free will. We can make our own choices. And, you know, I have a lot of friends in other countries that aren't so free, and they ask me about freedom all the time. And I said, you know, the essence of freedom is being able to make our own choices, not having some government body or having some corporation or even having, you know, some other party make choices for you or tell you how to think or tell you how to feel. Or if you feel a certain way, not shame you into what you're feeling, about what you're feeling, but instead support that, because we have a democratic system And in that democratic system, albeit full of crybabies concurrently, we still have the freedom to choose. Right? So, apparently both positive and negative portals can be created by free will. They can exist because they've been called into existence. But you ask, how could that be? How could you call something into existence? How could you be powerful enough? How could you be Master Sherm and take those people and send them sprawling? What are you creating? What are you doing? Where are you getting the energy from? Where is it coming and where is it going to? And how did you muster that energy? How did you get it together? All these questions need to be answered, right? So if our spirit guide stopped the opening of negative portals, I guess this would mean that as people, we're not true masters of our destiny. A lot of scientists think that we're in some kind of weird matrix, and that we're not. We have no free will, that everything is predetermined. Even in our brains, when we go to make a decision, apparently that decision has already been made minutes earlier, and then we go and do it. People love to get sidetracked, though. So, I guess with light we have dark, and you need that balance, which was a yin and yang, you know? So portals and vortexes exist, and then you use them for what you will. I think that if you open something, you may not be able to close it. And it's, you know, so all right, let's just take all that and digest it for a moment. And think about traveling. Let's say you want to go to Miami from New York. You have to go, you can drive, take a while, you know, a day, a little longer. You can take a bus. Einstein got his theory of relativity on a bus. You can top a train. You can take a plane. Right? All of these, or you can take a boat. Right? I mean, there's a lot of ways of getting there, is my point. All of these are different ways of getting there that take a different amount of time over the same distance. So now, what if you wanted to travel through space? Physically, as humans, we really can't do it. Because the second we go into space, our bodies start to degenerate. Our bones get weakened. Our blood doesn't flow. You know, our blood goes through the heart. It needs pressure from our legs to send blood back up. So when we're in a zero gravity environment, our bodies don't flow like they should because we're creatures of gravity. So one, if we're going to travel through space, we need to create an artificial gravity, right? And not even I'm saying, you know, people say cryogenic sleep and that type of thing. Yeah, cryogenic sleep, really? We can't even make a freezer that's reliable for our kitchen. You know, I mean, maybe okay. They all have some issue, it seems like, an ice maker anyway. I have issues with my ice maker. But it wasn't designed very well. But the reality is, all of us can imagine getting to Florida. And sometimes when you say to someone, and all of our perception is different. If I say, I'm going to Florida, you might think, okay, he's going to fly. Or, if you're afraid to fly, you might think, okay, he's going to drive, or take a train, or take a bus, or I can hitchhike, right? I could get on a tricycle, do that, albeit stupid, time-consuming and wasteful, but it's a way of getting there. So if we're going to travel through space, we need to have that artificial gravity. We're not going to be able to travel billions of years through life space and get somewhere because we would be dead after a very short amount of time because we are creatures of this planet. But now, what about the quantum level? And like what I talked about last quantum physics, what about folding space? Taking two points, folding it together, making a doorway, making that vortex, making that energy hole, and walking through. You'd have to know where you're walking through, too. So you need to calculate five-dimensional space. But once you've done that, we can, let's say we have a point of entry and point of exit, right? Let's say we're going to the moon. Now, the moon is constantly moving, as are we, as is the Earth, as is everything, where everything is moving. So to calculate that space and that time and space and have a doorway from one place to the other would be unbelievably difficult, unless, like, you know, in the movie Stargate, and I don't like referencing movies too much, but movies usually end up coming true. If you look at all the movies from the 50s and 60s about science fiction, we're there. So in that movie, there was a Stargate on one side, there was a Stargate on the other side, and there was a code that they had to decipher, right? And awesome movie. They did. They went through the Stargate. They ended up in another planet, another place, all together. There were people there. It was based on the Egyptian culture. But they were able to travel from one place to the other instantaneously through that vortex of energy, that portal of energy. And then this is what scientists, a lot of scientists are working on. You know, when you talk about the super colliders, this is what they're working on. You're talking about these high-level collisions, what they're doing, and smashing atoms and collecting antimatter, things like that. You know, incredible of how far we've come technologically, being the lumbskulls that we are. Because mankind can't even make a toupee that's believable, let alone talk about traveling through space. But the very fact that we right now, and you're listening to this, I'm talking about folding space and making a vortex and doing these things, if we're talking about it, we can work for those goals. If we work for those goals, we can make those things happen. So maybe we did come from Mars. I had a dream about one of my uncles, who is a scientist, my great uncles, my grandmother's brothers, there's three of them that were all scientists. And then my Uncle Henry, who I love, who was the greatest guy in the world, would tell you anything you want to know. You know, you say, hey, what do you like? Oh, I like radio. He'd show you how to make one. Tell you how it works, the principle of it, the radio waves. My Uncle Stevie, who died before I was born, actually made a substance that's used on aircraft carriers that absorbs the shock of the planes, and they had a chemical research and development company. So I had a dream, Uncle Henry. I was with him. I think I was about 8 years old, somewhere around there, when I had this dream. And it was like a twilight dream. It wasn't like a dream. So we're under the surface of Mars. We're in an area with a lot of animals. And there was like saber-toothed tigers, and there was woolly mammoths, all that stuff. There was a lucite type of looking floor with light coming from underneath it, with water running under the floor. And he said that we're really from Mars, and we had to leave, and we populated the Earth. And that's the dream. And I remember the smell. I remember the sights. I remember the sounds. I remember the animals breathing. I remember him talking, how he looked in the dream, all that stuff. Is it real? Is it a kid's concept of what life could have been or dream another place at that age? You know, human brain's an amazing thing. We have no idea we don't even know our own brains. We're just trying to map them now. We're just trying to find ways through MRIs and things like that to map brains. But what our brains do and what they house is our spiritual energy. And that in of itself. And also, like, you know, when people, I'm running out of time, but when people have dreams that they're falling, it's usually you coming back into your body. But I'll tell you this, right now I'm going to end the show, but I'll tell you this. I used to sleepwalk when I was a kid, and I woken up many times, you know, touching the walls and things like that. But I had many dreams where I was touching the ceiling, and I was up touching the ceiling. How weird is that? So anyway, this is Michael Angley on Discovery Paranormal. I hope you got a bunch of stuff out of the show tonight. This is UPRN, United Public Radio Network, UPRNTalkRadio.com, 107.5 New Orleans, 104.7 at Past Christiana. I'll see you guys next week.
If you're a guy over 40, you need to avoid doing any type of cardio until you've watched.
Streets and cobblestones.